It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. As part of our ongoing conversations about homelessness, we examine the efforts of a statewide poverty-fighting network. It's 16 community action agencies working together on this issue. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at any point. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brad Paul is executive director of the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. Brad, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thanks, Kate. Thanks for having me, and thanks for your interest in this topic.
Yes, let's begin with poverty. There's a new UW Extension report saying poverty in Wisconsin remains higher than it was two decades ago. What is typically driving poverty rates in the state?
Well, from what I've read in the report, I think they get it right. It's really a loss of manufacturing jobs. With that, a decline in union membership. This puts pressure on wages, downward pressure. Then there's also a continued sort of a historic retreat from the safety net. During the pandemic, we saw the federal government reinvest in emergency relief, rent assistance, food assistance, and we actually saw the poverty rates dip. As that retreats, we're seeing those spike up again. So I think the report gets it right. The report also talks a little bit about how we compare to our neighbors and their marginal differences. Minnesota has a better track record, and that's a result of their public policies. But this is a national problem, and the margins, as I said, are very, very slim from state to state. This is an ongoing historic problem that we've yet to address.
You mentioned the help during the pandemic. How did the expanded child tax credit that's expired, how did that affect child poverty?
It resulted in those numbers dropping pretty substantially. We had the child tax credit. We had emergency rent assistance. We had increases in emergency food supplementals through the food share program. All of that combined made a significant difference in the lives of Wisconsinites.
How does inflation factor into this and the overall increased cost of living? How does that create financial challenges for families?
Well, inflation's tough for everyone, but like so much, it disproportionately affects low-income families. When you're spending more on food or rent, you're making difficult choices about which priorities you need to address.
African Americans and Indigenous people experience homelessness at higher rates than white people, and that's from the National Alliance to End Homelessness. How is your state network seeking to reduce generational cycles of poverty and poverty in historically marginalized communities?
Yeah, well, unfortunately, Wisconsin has a really regrettable track record on when we talk about racial disparities, some of the highest in the country. We're trying to take a broad, comprehensive view, try to look at the systems that feed into deep poverty and disproportionately affect certain communities. You know, one thing that I think is important for us to think about when we talk about the relationship between poverty and homelessness and extreme poverty is that think about it like a Venn diagram, if you will, and take the different sets. You might have low wages, you might have lack of health care, lack of access to affordable housing, expensive child care costs, expensive costs for food, to your point about inflation. The meeting point in all of those issues is where we get extreme poverty and homelessness. That's where that occurs. That's where that happens. So in some respects, you know, we talk a lot about housing insecurity. We talk a lot about food insecurity. And I know you're going to have a guest on after me that talks about that item specifically. But in some respects, we need to stop thinking about these different insecurities in isolation and think about a more integrated whole and attacking poverty through the lens of a much more just economic system. So that's kind of the view that our agencies take, our member agencies, and that's kind of the view from the policy front that we're trying to pursue.
Oh, because there are so many overlapping areas that all connect into homelessness, and that right there can all drive toward extreme homelessness as these areas compound. Is that what you're trying to say?
Correct. Correct. We have a systems problem, and what we've done is we've set up sort of individual systems to deal with those individual problems rather than a comprehensive solution. For example, homelessness, we have sort of what is known as the homeless system, but that deals with people once they've fallen into homelessness. It doesn't look at a larger system to prevent that from beginning. Give you an example. Since 2007, over the last 15, 16, 17 years, we've reduced homelessness by a little over 800 people when we take the most basic count of what ho how homelessness is defined. So it's about 58, 59, 60 people a year if you do it in the aggregate. We've at that same time created about 2,700 units of housing with the homeless system. But that's the problem, is we're looking at these isolated systems rather than looking at the larger comprehensive view, which is higher wages, union membership, access to affordable health care. These are the things that we need to prevent that extreme poverty and homelessness from occurring to begin with. And we just haven't done that.
Brad Paul leads the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. As we dig into the causes of homelessness, you can join in with your questions. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brad, recently here on the show, we talked with homeless services leader Ashley Wisniewski of Milwaukee. And here's Wisniewski talking about the needs of homeless people.
You have to find your food. You have to find something to wear. You have to find a place to charge your cell phone. But we talk about a lot on the team as a team. We can all be one paycheck away from homelessness, and we don't keep that out of our minds.
One paycheck away from homelessness, how much does a person need to be financially secure and escape the life of living paycheck to paycheck?
Well, first of all, she's right. That's the daily struggle that people are faced with. It's said in Wisconsin you need to make about $20 an hour working 40 hours a week in order to afford a two-bedroom apartment. Minimum wage, by comparison, in the state is $7.25 an hour. It's been that way for at least a decade. So you can see right there the math doesn't work. People are continually faced with those difficult decisions that you just played that clip from. Do I pay for food? Do I pay for childcare if I have a child? Do I pay the rent? Those are the difficult choices that are continually being presented to people and resulting in spikes in homelessness.
When you look specifically at housing, how is your group addressing the need for affordable housing? What are you working on?
Well, there's sort of two approaches. There is both trying to meet people's immediate needs, and then there are the longer-term solutions. On the immediate need front, we partnered with the state during the pandemic to help run the Wisconsin Emergency Rental Assistance Program. During the course of that, close to $300 million were distributed through our network in 68 out of 72 counties. That prevented mass eviction. And then over the longer term, we're trying to partner and develop longer-term solutions on permanent housing. This is where it gets tricky because the long arc of homeless policy, federal homeless policy, has been a retreat away from creating the permanent solutions. It's more of an immediate fix. It's trying to address sort of the most visible manifestations of homelessness, people you see on the street. It ignores the larger issue, much larger issue of homeless families who are living doubled up, who are living in motels. But that requires money to build these units. And we're now into 30 plus years of a federal retreat from those kind of investments. There's good work happening. The Evers administration, with bipartisan support, was able to get through $500 million for housing, workforce housing. There's good efforts happening at the local level as well, but these are just scratching the surface of what needs to be done. It's really a federal solution, just whatever the good efforts are at the state level. And the other thing I might add is, there's a lot of talk, hopeful talk, good positive talk about creating more workforce housing, which those bills that I just mentioned are designed to do. But left out of that discussion typically is what kind of worker? And what I mentioned earlier, that a minimum wage worker is making about $7 an hour. those are workers by any definition as well. And yet the housing stock that we're creating escapes that the reach of those households. So we need to have a really honest discussion about who is left out of the mix, who our economy does not serve, and what we do to fill that gap. And building workforce housing is good. We will continue to support that, but we also need housing for extremely low wage workers, and that just isn't happening at, really at any level.
Brad Paul leads the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. That's a network of local agencies working on solutions to reduce poverty and homelessness. Join this discussion by calling in with a question. You can add your thoughts at 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We examine the complexities of homelessness in Wisconsin, learning about new efforts underway at the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. 16 local agencies working together to help people get out of poverty and thrive. Call in with a question. You can share your views, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Brad Paul is Executive Director of the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. Brad, let's touch down on childcare for a moment. Childcare can be a major financial burden. Forward Analytics estimates the average annual cost for infant childcare here in Wisconsin was more than $13,000 in 2021. Does the cost of childcare contribute to poverty?
Of course, it's huge. Increasingly so. You know, when we look at sort of a pie chart for household expenses, housing is typically one that takes up a disproportionate amount of a household's income. We're starting to see childcare occupy a greater piece of that overall pie. Our agencies are continually confronted with this. We have lots of people coming through the doors of CAP agencies who are just forced to make really terrible decisions about what they can do for their child's care, whether to pay the rent, whether to pay for other expenses. We know that Governor Evers had included a pretty ambitious set of proposals within the budget that were rejected, and we know that he utilized some money in the ARPA dollars, the federal dollars for COVID relief, to extend child care accounts program through, I believe, September of next year. So that's helpful. But like housing, this is something that society is going to have a reckoning with and figure out what level do we have ongoing permanent subsidies for low-income households.
You're a member of the State Research Advisory Committee for ALICE, which stands for Asset Limited, Income Constrained. How does this resource provide financial stability to families?
Well, ALICE is a measure. It's a way to rethink in some respects what economic security is for households in Wisconsin. The federal poverty guidelines, the federal poverty threshold, was something that was set up in the mid to late 60s when the war on poverty was launched. And this was really pegged to a household's ability to buy its groceries. And a small sort of crude measure was put in place of what was required to do that. It hasn't changed over the years much. And for a household of one, it's a little bit over $14,000, and then it goes up by sort of increments of about $5,000. What that all means is that the federal poverty level is extremely low and not representative of a larger segment of people in our state and elsewhere who struggle. So ALICE tries to look at all of the assets that go into a household, all of the expenses, and sort of look at what that means for Wisconsin households in real terms. And that number, that report that comes out every year, shows that more than a third of the Wisconsin families in this state struggle to meet their most basic needs. So we use that in tandem with the federal poverty threshold to sort of drive public policy and talk about what it is in real terms of what households are dealing with.
So a real specific economic measurement for Wisconsin households and what it costs to live, is that how
That's
you
correct.
Would see the Alice Essentials Index?
That's correct. Yeah. That's exactly correct.
Let's take a call now. Mike in Madison is here. Mike, hi.
Hi. Yes, I have a question for your guest. So we've tried the low-income housing large developments in the notorious Cabrini Green down in Chicago. Madison has multiple low-income units, either using Section 8 or the Section 42, which is very similar. And several of those developments, or at least one for sure, has been deemed a public nuisance because of all of the crime and police calls. How does your guest have a solution to just basically repeating the Cabrini-style housing developments to house low-income, and have we not learned, you know, from what happened there 60, 70 years ago?
Brad, go ahead.
Sure. Well, the unfortunate truth is we're not in any danger of repeating that, because in 1998, the federal government passed a law called the Faircloth Amendment, which actually prohibited the addition, the net addition of units for public housing. So we've actually been retreating very dramatically from public housing over the last 25, 30 years. No new units are being added in terms of a net gain. What I would also say is that we can still imagine, and we can still do public housing and social housing, however you want to define it. We can do that in ways that don't repeat, the sort of the notorious Cabrini Green example. There's scattered site options. There's different sort of architectures, if you will, both physical and social architectures of how we might do that. But the problem is, and this is, again, something that we just need to have an honest conversation about and get away from sort of the stereotypes, is that we have a large segment of our population who simply is cut out by the market, that the market is not providing housing, whether it's through a Section 8 voucher or any other number of ways to get people into affordable housing. The unit gap is just too great. There's 130,000 units that we would need to build in order to fill the demand for the extremely low-income household population in the state of Wisconsin. And the market isn't producing those kind of units. So we need to figure out a way to do that. And I don't think we really get very far when we sort of we cite the mistakes of the past when we know that there are alternative ways to create social housing for folks.
So is that a housing developer issue? Is that a state issue? Who should be at the table to figure this out, to find those and create those 130,000 units?
Well, it's a huge scale, as you've just said. I mean, it's massive. And it's not, you know, as I said earlier, there's good stuff happening with the state. The bills that were passed that the governor supported, there was bipartisan support that WEDA is now sort of charged with producing with a low-income housing tax credit. That's good. But that alone will only create, it's just a drop in the bucket of the total number of units we need. The solution really is federal, and this isn't unique to Wisconsin. The HUD budget, which has historically provided that gap, has provided housing for that low-income population, has just been eviscerated, starting in the early 80s, and we've never restored it. And it's what really launched modern homelessness. We also, as I just said, retreated entirely almost from public housing. So when you take that kind of investment away and don't replace it at scale, we are left with a major, major gap that I don't think the market has really stepped up to demonstrate that it can provide. So it's a federal solution, but of course, like anything, it requires state and local partners.
I want to bring up a listening session that your association held on homelessness services in Ashland County. And in our last minute together, we're going to talk with the leader of the BRIC Ministries, which provides food and emergency financial assistance. What does Ashland County need to support the homeless population?
Well, unfortunately, I wasn't at that session. I wish I was. My staff was there, and I wish they were out on the call with me to talk about what they heard. I know about 35, 40 people from across the community showed up, including the BRIC. I think what they need and what any community needs is the resources to identify and to address the needs, the particular needs of their community. There's, you know, the one thing that we've learned over the years is one size does not fit all. And what Ashland might need, looks very different from, say, what Milwaukee might need. These are different populations, you know, different infrastructures, and different, homelessness, which homelessness reveals itself very differently in different communities. Mm-hmm. The causes are similar, however. It's the lack of wages, it's the lack of health care, and it's a lack of affordable housing. And so that I can guarantee you is Ashland's needs, but how they produce the response that's necessary is going to be customized and localized.
Brad, thank you for joining us.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Brad Paul, Executive Director of the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association. There is more conversation ahead. We learn about fighting hunger in the northern Wisconsin counties of Ashland and Bayfield. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Nearly a 500,000 people struggle with hunger in Wisconsin, and that's according to Feeding America. We hear from two groups working on this issue, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question, share comments at 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. TJ Atkins is executive director of the Community Table in Eau Claire, the organization serving a daily meal to the public year-round. TJ, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
Good morning. And we have Liz Seafelt with us, executive director of the Brick Ministries. That's a faith-based nonprofit helping low-income residents of Ashland and Bayfield counties. Liz, welcome back.
Good morning. Thank you, Kate.
Liz, let's start with you. How does the Brick Ministries support people living in Ashland and Bayfield counties?
Sure, thank you. We operate two programs. Most people know us through our food shelf program. We operate four pantries throughout our region where we see folks who are at or below 200% of federal poverty level. And then we also operate what we call a benevolence program. We offer a modest amount of emergency financial assistance with a focus on helping people get into or retain their own housing. In addition to that financial assistance that we're giving to, for instance, overdue rent, overdue utility bills, and motel vouchers for people without permanent housing, we're also providing referrals to other community agencies, programs, to make sure that folks are getting plugged into long-term resources.
What have you seen through the benevolence program? What impact has it made?
Well, that's a tough one because the folks who are using the benevolence program are really the most in need, at the very bottom. And so things are tenuous for folks who use our services through that program. Really, we understand that folks aren't making enough money, whether it's earned income or through Social Security or whatever it might be, to meet their daily needs. So for many folks, it's kind of a shell game. Which bill do I pay on time this month? It's incredibly challenging, and honestly, it's a tough needle to thread.
TJ, as we talk about meeting daily needs, how does the Community Table affect food access in the Eau Claire area?
Well, we provide a daily meal, 7 days a week, 365 days a year. That's through our connection with Feed My People for those donations. So we provide that meal service. And then we also have a monthly food pantry, depending on what we have available for food. But just like Liz, we are seeing people struggling with that. And as we head into winter right now, it definitely becomes a shell game of what they want to pay in terms of their heat, their rent, and things of that nature, where we can help provide some relief with providing a free meal every single day.
Do you find that you have enough inventory at the food pantry?
Oh, yes. It's surprising. So when I hear people talk about there's a food shortage, you would not know that from our end of it. Our food donations have gone up ever since the beginning of the pandemic. Each year, I think last year we did 130,000 pounds of food. So we're now able to offer not only their daily meal, but usually kind of like a grocery bag, a snack item. So our guests will leave here sometimes with not only their hot meal, but also like a bag of things that they can use throughout the week as well.
Is that the community stepping up? Who is stepping up so that you do have enough to give out?
So it's kind of a mix of everything. So between our partnership with Feed My People, we do the food rescue from Target and then Holiday. But then we also have additional partnerships like Panera, Subway, Quick Trip, Crumble. Cookie Crumble gives us donations as well. Just a ton of those types of donations. But then we also have community donations. You know, the summer came along with all the vegetables and gardens and everybody had extras. So they brought those extras to us. So we're able to provide a great amount of food to our community members.
Liz, what do you experience at the Brick Ministries for food pantries?
As far as?
As in terms of inventory and what you're able to offer, yes.
Yeah, we're really proud, if I can use that word, of the wide variety of food that we offer in all the food categories. And in a lot of different forms. Certainly, there's the standard, what you would think of as commodity foods that are canned or, you know, dry packaged vegetables, grains, that kind of thing. And we're also offering breakfast items, shelf-stable and refrigerated beverages, milk primarily, but also a really wide variety of shelf-stable proteins, including things like walnuts, or I think at one point we had some pistachios, and then frozen proteins, meats, fish, poultry, that kind of thing. And our resources to get all those are incredibly generous and very strong. Primarily, there's the Emergency Food Assistance Program, a federal commodities program, and then we also source food from our regional food bank, which is Second Harvest Northern Lakes Food Bank, a member of Feed America. The retailers that we rescue food from under Feeding America's food rescue program, and then other local retailers who are also rescuing food for us.
I wonder, that's okay. TJ, I just wanted you to pick up on food rescue there for a moment and these partnerships mm-hmm. with restaurants and retailers. Is that the future of stocking, you know, for food operations?
I think definitely there's food that it can be still used within a certain amount of time. And so if they have large quantities of it, then we can get that out to people. So I do think that that is a possibility, you know, going towards the future. We have places in other countries where they actually have stores where people can get basically food, but they purchase it at a reduced rate because it is food that might have come from a restaurant or something like that. So I think it is a possibility going in the future, especially as I keep seeing the continuation of the amount that is being donated. And where does this food go? And I know that we're not even collecting all of it in our area. So what happens to stuff that doesn't get picked up?
With the community tables meal every day, is it the same people served every day? Do you see new faces?
We have seen new faces ever since the pandemic. And so before the pandemic, I could look out and probably name about four or five of our regulars. Now it's not the same. We have almost new people every single day. And so it's interesting to see that change as well as the demographic change in terms of it seems to be like our younger families. We've had an increase in families coming in to see us now as well. So it's just very interesting times that we're in as we're transitioning through this pandemic and what does the world look like now.
TJ Atkins oversees the community table in Eau Claire. Liz Seafelt leads the Brick Ministries, which supports low-income families in two northern Wisconsin counties as we talk about food and housing insecurity. You can join in with your questions and comments at any point, 800-642-1234. Liz, what are you learning about food insecurity from the people you serve?
Well, food insecurity is on the rise. I think your previous guest, Brad Paul, talked a little bit about the sunsetting of federal programs after the pandemic, and that certainly has a dramatic impact on our pantry shoppers. We've had a big increase in the numbers of people that we're serving since the discontinuation of the additional food share benefits that were connected with the pandemic. So we've had an increase of 20% from between this year and last year of pantry usage, the number of people.
Hmm. Do you find that you have enough volunteers to serve the community?
No, we do not. That's a hard one. Volunteerism just in general is on the decline even before the pandemic, but the pandemic really was a point that changed how people look at their lives and prioritize their activities. And so volunteerism has really gone down over the last several years. And we're always looking for volunteers, whether it's, you know, once a month or once a week. We're happy to have you.
Let's hear a voice. This is a person who is experiencing homelessness in Milwaukee called The Sanctuary and interviewing shelter staff about their experiences. Here's Aaron talking about the difficulties of being homeless without having the support of family.
I was homeless. Did a lot of undesirable things. Stealing, robbing, breaking in people's houses, cars. Had a drug addiction. My family, they wouldn't help me. They turn their back on me when they see me coming. They pull down the shade, take the phone off the hook.
There's a lack of family support there. Liz, how common are these experiences in northern Wisconsin?
Well, some people think that homelessness is only an urban condition, but homelessness is everywhere. So we have an extremely sparse and rural population. The two counties together are, the population is maybe 30,000. So last year, we at the BRIC serviced just under 175 individuals without permanent housing. 175 doesn't sound like that much, except for the fact that we're really have such a tiny population. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's not all the people who are homeless in our community.
TJ, how would you respond to what you heard there from Aaron, who found that just a lack of support from their, surrounding family members?
Mm-hmm. Well, and another thing to note, though, it's usually not, they're not even in the same area where their families are. We've mm-hmm. noted that a lot of our guests, you know, are transit from all kinds of different parts of the U.S. that are coming through just periodically. So, you know, half the time their family doesn't even know where they're at, let alone mm-hmm. to help them navigate where they're at and what they need. And so it is a challenge for them. And I do hear that quite often. You know, they feel like they're not seen or they're not wanted. And we try to create an environment for that where that's contrary to that. And so
how do you do that?
Well, we have our volunteers that are help. So we greet our guests. We actually have conversations with them. We eat meals with them. There's music playing, you'll hear. We'll have some guests like to tell jokes amongst themselves. They kind of build their own community as well when they're visiting us. And so they look forward to seeing each other. And so even if their family is not near or close, they kind of create their own family kind of network within our organization.
TJ Atkins heads up the community table in Eau Claire, serving a meal a day throughout the year. Liz Seafelt leads the BRIC Ministries, assisting low-income residents in Ashland and Bayfield counties in the North Woods. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We learn about the connection between hunger and homelessness and explore the work of two organizations working on this issue in northern and west central Wisconsin. TJ Atkins is executive director of the Community Table in Eau Claire, and Liz Seafelt is executive director of the BRIC Ministries with programs in Ashland and Bayfield counties. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share your views. 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Let's bring in Casey in Watertown. Hi, Casey. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to the individual from the Community Table. I know sometimes it's a thankless job, but I relied on that for several years when I was in Eau Claire. Sometimes that was the only meal I had a day. And I just really appreciate the time and effort and the resources that you guys put into that.
Casey, can I ask, in that time you turned to the Community Table, was that like your only meal for the day?
At times, yes.
Mm. How did you recover from that?
For starters, I stopped using drugs. Mm. That was a big part of it. But I would if I was in Eau Claire and the time was right, I'd go there today. Because I mean, I know it's a thankless job. Sometimes people would complain about the food, and I mean, I've never had a bad meal there. And I would go there today just for the meal. I mean, if I was in Eau Claire.
Did you find it a welcoming space? Did you find community to talk with?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Especially after they opened the doors again after COVID, where people could go in there, and drink some coffee and socialize.
Casey, are you doing better now, would you say?
Absolutely. Mm. Absolutely. Yep. And in part from, I mean, they also have a thankless and underrated shelter in Eau Claire with the combination of the Community Table and that shelter, got me through a dark period. And yep, I'm absolutely doing much better.
Casey, thank you so much for calling in and sharing your personal story. TJ, what would you like to say?
Thank you, Casey, for your support. We're glad we can be of service to you.
That is so moving, and it must make you feel so good about a positive experience for one of your guests, TJ.
Yes, that's always the end game, is to see those positives as we interact with guests, even as small as it may be, with just a smile and they're leaving full, to they come back, years later, and they might be a volunteer wanting to give back because they're on a different path and doing much, much better. So yes, definitely like those small wins.
Mm, do you find that you have people who have come to you turn around years later and become volunteers?
Yes, we do have that occasionally. We also have it where we've had volunteers that were here serving as kids, and now they have kids of their own, so they bring their children here to volunteer. Mm-hmm. So that's been a rewarding experience as well to see, too.
Liz, earlier we talked with Brad Paul, leads the Wisconsin Community Action Program Association, and the BRIC Ministries recently joined the statewide group to discuss homelessness in Ashland County. What came up at the listening session?
Well, there was a range of folks who joined the conversation, some landlords, service providers, a few folks who with some lived experience as well. And I think what we came up with is that this issue is not going away anytime soon. A huge factor is just the lack of affordable housing.
Hmm. And that is an issue both in rural areas, sparsely populated areas where you are, as well as an urban issue. And what I think I hear is that it's just maybe some different ways to tackle it and to address it. How do you look at the contrast between a rural and an urban area issue?
Well, a big factor in providing affordable housing is how do we attract developers. In such a sparsely populated area, we don't have enough people to support a large development. And so developers, just really many, are not interested in coming to a remote place like Ashland and Bayfield counties because it's not, it's not quote unquote worth it. So that's a big factor. How do we get developers to come up and work on what we would in general terms consider a small scale project rather than a large scale project?
I wonder, TJ, in the people who come to the community table to eat, how are they struggling with finding housing that is permanent and that is affordable?
Yeah, that is a huge struggle in Eau Claire to find affordable housing. We have lots of developments, but the developments are not affordable for those residents that are here. There's lots of barriers that they can't get to that housing, be it, you know, their backgrounds or whatever. And landlords and property developers here, you know, really have the cream of the crop of who they want to pick. So they might post for one location, and within minutes they have 50 to 100 applicants for that one location. So unless you can rise to the top of that pile, you're kind of sorted out really quickly. And so it's a struggle for our guests to find housing in our area.
That is TJ Atkins with the Community Table in Eau Claire. Liz Seifelt is here with the BRIC Ministries working on this issue in northern Wisconsin. You can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Anne with us in northern Wisconsin. Anne, hi. What would you like to share?
I would like to share information regarding the Rural Care and Share food shelf, which serves only once a month, but it's better than nothing, in Iron River, Wisconsin, at Our Savior's Lutheran Church. And the food distribution is from 9 to 11 on that third Saturday of every month. And just want to get the word out so we maybe have more people coming. Not that, you know, we don't want more people to have issues with hunger, but we know they're out there.
Oh, thank you for sharing that information, Anne, in Iron River. You know, we're approaching winter. It means people who are unsheltered can face dangerously cold temperatures. Liz, how do you plan to support people in the months ahead?
Well, we work with a few key hotels, motels in the area to offer vouchers. A big player is our CAP agency's shelter that's located in Ashland, but it only has, a finite number of rooms, and it does not have enough rooms to support all the folks without permanent housing. So it's really working with a lot of different partners. We're grateful that the two tribes, the Bad River and Red Cliff, bands of Lake Superior Chippewa, will be opening their warming shelters for the season. All these different organizations together kind of make sure that we're connecting with each other to provide shelter for folks without permanent housing.
Liz and TJ, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Kate.
Thank you.
Liz Seifelt, Executive Director of the BRIC Ministries in Ashland. TJ Atkins, Executive Director of the Community Table in Eau Claire. Here in the show, we're producing a range of conversations about homelessness and housing insecurity. You can find links to our recent conversations and this ongoing coverage, and share all your program ideas as well. Connect with us at wpr.org/mornings. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.